Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. How are you, people? How are you, Mark Riley?
I'm doing great. How are you, Mark Maron?
Well, you know, I don't want to be hacky or predictable, but it's Friday.
Yeah.
And I tell you something, man, I really get excited about it now. And now that I am an employed person who works every day like most people, if they're lucky, Friday is very exciting. It's very exciting to me, Riley.
It
just
is.
The fact that it's Friday. Kalo, the Costco ho, you got a Costco trip planned?
Not this weekend.
We need more popcorn, dude. I went through the popcorn. Could you give me another box of 90?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, there's nothing like microwave popcorn at 3 o'clock in the morning to make you feel like a loser. Oh, my God.
It's 97% fat-free. It's all right.
94%. But I'll take it. I'll take 97. And not that I'm like I'm weight conscious or anything. But by the way.
Doesn't that stuff clog up your insides or something?
Easy, easy. I counter. Do we have to go into my insides? You know, we've been on the air for 3 minutes already. I'm in my insides. Yes. No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Not with the vegetarian diet, Mark.
Ah.
But anyways, that's going pretty well. Pashman has decided, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, I don't know what the right word is, but I think the best, you said it once, Kayla, was when he came in. Was it you who said, when did this become The View? Who said that? who was it? Was that you who said that?
I think that was Mark Riley, actually.
Oh, was it you?
I don't know. I'm old. I don't remember what I said from one day to the next.
Well, me and Pashman are having these crockpot discussions, you know, and he says, you know, next week, he says, next week I'm going to come in, I'm going to crock a chicken. Because he says he can crock a chicken with, he says he puts a chicken in the crock pot with no liquid. And he just cooks it for 6 hours and it's good. Remember we was talking about that?
Yeah, I know. Well, and he doesn't have any taste buds. That's why it tastes good to him.
Well, I don't know. And you immediately were like, nah, I ain't going to eat it. I'm not eating
I ain't eating it. I'll tell you right now. First of all, I don't like crock-potted food. You know why? Because it reminds me. My mother used to cook food in those old-fashioned
pressure cookers. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where, you know, the whistle that you can hear 3 blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I never liked the food that she made in
just,
it.
Just like it blasted it apart, didn't it?
Yeah.
But that was so funny. Pashman's like, we can put it on at 5 in the morning, and by the end of the show, it'll be cooked.
It'll be ready.
It'll be great. You know, and it's like, all right. But he actually thought it would be an interesting radio to sort of the progress of the crocking.
A watch crock pot never boils?
Dude,
I don't know.
What about this kid? You know, I did Conan O'Brien with this kid. This 9-year-old kid that Bush has taken on the road like a puppet. This guy, Noah McCullough.
Yeah.
The presidential trivia kid. How screwed up is that kid's going to be? He's quoting his mother, right? Quote, he's a very patriotic person. He's very patriotic and very Republican, says Noah's mother, Donna McCullough, a former teacher and self-described Democrat. It's the way he was born. He's nine! He's some sort of freak in nature with a good memory, but you can't put him in a little Navy suit and put him up on a podium and have him, you know, blast stuff for Bush. Apparently he campaigned with Bush. And the 9-year-old kid is saying, it'll be bankrupt if we don't do something now by the time I'm president.
Child abuse.
It's something.
It's child. Look, let me tell you something. I was a Richard Nixon fan when I was 8 years old. Okay, the year 1960, the year that Nixon ran against Kennedy. There's no way in the world I should have been pro Nixon, but I was a kid.
That's because you're 9 years old. You see a guy get out of a helicopter. You're like, I like that guy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? What the
that's all that was.
Make? Who's the guy in the helicopter?
And you know what? If my parents had sat down or exposed me to Nixon's policies, I could have spouted him. I had a great memory as a kid. That doesn't mean I should be shilling next to the guy somewhere.
It's unbelievable.
It's child abuse.
The trip was the brainchild of Stuart Roy, a former aide to Representative Tom DeLay.
Well, that's bitch.
Yes, the bug-killing dwarf king of the Republican, the neocon death cult's legislative pig pack. Now, speaking about pig packs, let me ask you a question, Riley. At what point, when do we take these damn Democrats to, listen to me saying it like that, to task? I mean, you know, we've got a bunch of people that voted against this bankruptcy bill. You know, that voted against it, you know, out and out. I mean, Biden is obviously, being pimped by the credit card industry and by a large bankruptcy lawyer in the Delaware area. I understand that. I don't forgive him for it. I understand the other Democrats that did it because they are on the dole of credit card companies. I understand that. I don't accept it or forgive them for it. But, there's a bunch of other ones here that just did not need to do this.
18 of them, and Hillary Clinton didn't vote.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why she didn't vote. She was in Washington. When I first saw Mark that she didn't vote, I thought, oh, well, okay, her old man just got out of surgery. She's probably at the hospital making sure he's okay, massaging his chest, whatever. But then she did a press conference with Rick Santorum yesterday.
Not only did she not vote in the Senate or go, hang out with her husband. Clearly, that's a strained marriage. I think we can sort of accept that.
Well, no, don't read anything into the fact that she was in a different city after coming out of the surgery.
Heart surgery, to remove fluid from his lungs. But that's besides the point. The point is that, and she's on the Capitol steps with Rick Santorum and Lieberman.
And Sam Brownback.
Brownback, of all people. But, we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, we are.
I think that, what they are trying to, put in action, I think that the study, the research they want to put in action, is important research. I do think it's important.
Oh, no, it is definitely.
And we're going to definitely talk about that later in the show. What I want to talk about when we come back after Radio Theater, Morning Sedition Radio Theater, is these 18 Democrats. I mean, I've got to be, taught a lesson, Mark Riley.
I'll tell you before we go to break. Let me interrupt you and let me tell you why. Because nobody's going to get turned out of office for this. That's why.
Yeah, but we know the ones that are running for re-election. Are they so, guaranteed? Do they think they're so set that just because they're Democrats that they'll be voted in no matter what? Do you know what I'm saying? Is that, why don't they think the Democrats won't turn on them? You know what I mean?
Because they are what they're doing is betting that Democrats won't, and 9 times out of 10, they're right. The re-election rate in this country, Mark Maron, is scandalous.
No wonder we don't know what our core values are. We're going to come back after Morning Sedition Radio Theater. We will talk about these 18 senators. 13 past the hour, Air America Radio.
This is Congressman Barney Frank, and you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
The Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government.
When we last left Mark, he was in Los Angeles, where an actor who portrayed Osama bin Laden led him to a meeting of right-wing media power brokers chaired by Michael Powell. After crawling through a sewer, Mark kidnapped Powell and fled the scene.
Okay, Powell, get in your limo. I want to know where your father is. And stop staring at me like that. You look like Bush reading a thesaurus.
You're making a big mistake, Maron.
Driver, let's go.
And what is that smell?
I don't want to talk about it.
When he did it up, McGravy is exactly like cheerleading people. 2, 4, 6, 8, all you Muslims masturbate. Pray for your life, Skid Mark. And Charles Crater, Mark the Shark salutes you. Oh, I'm sorry. It's about
this guy's hilarious.
He can't say things like that on the air. I like his politics, though.
I like Al Franken.
Who asked you, driver?
Michael Powell was finally taking me to see the guy I was hired to find, Colin Powell. He dropped me at an apartment in Encino, and I rang the bell. Colin Powell, you're tougher to find than bin Laden. Assuming Bush had actually looked for bin Laden instead of retasking translators and surveillance resources to Iraq and pulling the 10th Mountain Division out of Afghanistan, leaving only unreliable Afghan warlords of questionable loyalty to conduct the hunt at Tora Bora. But even given all that, he'd still be pretty tough to find. And I guess all I'm saying is, you're even tougher. God, I'm exhausted.
Come on in. You look terrible. What is that smell?
Well, I've been tortured by Alberto Gonzalez, attacked by Ronald Reagan's clone, tied down and left to be eaten by rats, chased and shot at, and crawled through a sewer to catch your son, but your wife hired me to find you, so here I am.
Mr. Maron?
Mrs. Powell?
Oh, dear, did I forget to fire you? Let me write you a check. Obviously, this case is closed.
Not exactly. I know about the shadow government. I know about the fake bin Laden. I know about the corporate media conspiracy. And that's pretty much all I know right now. All right, can the music. What I don't know is, why were you on the run in the first place, Powell?
This tape I smuggled out of the White House should explain everything.
He wants to turn himself in. It'll ruin everything. Keep him out of the country. He's our ace in the hole.
Yeah, I remember when we used to call Hussein that. Finally had to pull him out of the hole.
Stop laughing.
Sorry, sir.
That's Bush and Cheney. They're not talking about Osama, are they?
That's why I ran. Bush would do anything to get his hands on this tape.
Wait. I may have an idea. Okay, now I lost it because the music distracted me. Enough with that, or I'll... Oh, for God's sakes.
Has Mark uncovered a dark secret of the shadow government? How will he prove it to the world? And is Mrs. Powell being played by the same actress as the last time she appeared in this series? It's been more than 2 months. How would you even know? Find out who knows what, and why they know it, and who'll find out about it, and what they're going to do when they find out, when we hear Mark say...
I... Stop it! I oughta...
That's next time on The Shadow Government. And tune in later for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players production of Buck Rogers in An Egalitarian Century.
Marin, set the controls for the Andromeda Galaxy.
Riley, set a course for Sirius, the Dog Star.
Have those controls been set to the Andromeda Galaxy?
Wait a minute. I'm the captain of the ship.
Oh, no, you're not.
Guy, this is your producer. If you don't stop arguing, we're going to crash into the sun.
And I suppose you're in charge now.
Let's dialogue about this.
The sun. We're headed right for it.
Ah! Ah!
Hey, Kalo, cue up the crash sound effect and send by announcer.
I think we should negotiate terms of limited shared authority.
Agreed, but first we'll form a committee to research models of confederation.
That's coming up later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
22 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
So, Mark, you know, sometimes we forget because we've been talking about this bankruptcy legislation for a week now, week and a half, and, you know, all the amendments that were attempts by the Democrats to stifle this thing, the desire for Congress to pass it, Republican Congress to pass it without any amendments. And I forget that some people may not be up to speed. To introduce our explanation of this, I'd like to quote Arianna Huffington's latest bit of commentary, because she really puts it just in practical terms. Here's a paragraph. So what does the bill do? It makes it harder for average people to file for bankruptcy protection. It makes it easier for landlords to evict a bankrupt tenant. It endangers child support payments by giving a wider array of creditors a shot at post-bankruptcy income. It allows millionaires to shield an unlimited amount of value in homes and asset protection trusts. It makes it more difficult for small businesses to reorganize while opening new loopholes for the Enrons of the world. It allows creditors to provide misleading information, and it does nothing to rein in lending abuses that frequently turn managers debt into unmanageable crisis. Even in failure, ordinary Americans do not get a level playing field. She hits it sometimes, man.
She hits it right on the head. And you might want to ask Mark Maron why women's groups didn't unite to oppose this, given the potential impact on child support. But
why Democrats?
Yeah, right.
Didn't.
But let's take a step back and explain to people exactly what we're talking about here.
Okay.
Under this bill, people will now be means tested as to their ability to declare Chapter 7, which is the bankruptcy that allows you to wipe out your debt. What it means is the median income of your state, whatever state you may live in, is going to be the line of demarcation. If you make more than that median, you will have to discharge your debts by paying a portion of them back. I believe you're talking about a max of $6,000 over 5 years, something on the order of $100 a month that you will have to pay. It does nothing, as Arianna Huffington points out. There were amendments that would have eliminated these asset protection trusts, which allow rich people, really rich people, to shield a good deal of their income from having to be paid back under bankruptcy. It also, they pushed back several amendments that would have made the bill a bit more poor folks friendly, if that's not too awkward a term, because right now what you're looking at, and Jonathan Larson brought this statistic up, 117 current or recent members of Congress have run companies that have declared bankruptcy. Think about that.
That's unbelievable.
117. Now, we're talking about a gene pool of 535 members of Congress. 117 over 535 runs out to almost 20%, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's an incredible statistic. Now, of course, that's Chapter 11 bankruptcy. That's corporate bankruptcy, which this Congress obviously thinks is in a completely different context. But the bottom line is these folks have some experience in bankruptcy themselves. 40 members of them have their own credit card debt they're dealing with.
Yeah, anywhere from $10,000 to $250,000 worth.
Yeah.
The weird thing about this is how they characterize the victims in this. You know, that they really made it seem like, you know, the people that are victims of bankruptcy
are slackers.
They're just looking for an easy way out. But 9 out of 10 bankruptcies occur because of health costs, loss of employment, or divorce. And these are health costs that are accrued after insurance, you know, runs out on these people. I just don't know where the disenfranchised are going to go with this. And this is the sad thing is that we've got 18 Democrats here that need to be taken to task a little bit. They went ahead and they voted this thing through. And it's amazing to me that most of the families who have done everything they can to avoid bankruptcy, like people have skipped doctor's visits or prescriptions. I mean, this also goes hand in hand with the whole Medicare, the pharmaceutical industry problem that Bush has sold Medicare out to the pharmaceutical companies. The government can't regulate, the cost of pharmaceuticals anymore. And with the Social Security thing, there's not going to be any money protected there if they push that thing through, which they won't. But it's just such an anti-people bit of legislation, and it's just so pro-business, and I just don't understand where, if the Democrats are supposed to be coming around to their core values again, what about these 18?
Well, Mark, one of the problems with these 18 is that they really don't understand what it's like for an ordinary American to have that feeling in the pit of their gut when they can't pay their bills. People don't, the impression that folks want to leave here, the folks in D.C., is that people just skip away and walk away and, hey, I'll just declare bankruptcy. That's not the way people live their lives in this country. People hurt when they can't pay their bills. People don't want to hear creditors calling up every 5 minutes saying, where's the money? This is not something that people enjoy. People don't. As Luther Gatling, who we had on earlier this week, said he's never seen anyone walking out of a bankruptcy hearing with a smile on their face.
Yeah, and the thing is like now it's not pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's adapt or die.
There you go.
That is the subtext of the Republican agenda.
We're going to come back. We're going to talk more about this. We've got Ramon just came through, dropped something off at the front. We got the Palm Pilot and much, much more. When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It's Friday morning. Hey, folks in Memphis, you want to protest Bush's plan to destroy Social Security? Well, the Social Security Screw the Future Revival Roadshow will be in Memphis today. So all you people listening to WWTQ 680 AM in Memphis, get out to the High Point Pinch parking lot at 111 Jackson, north of the Cannon Center, starting at 7 a.m. Go to MidSouthPeace.org for more information. I'd also like to say the entire extended Milfington family is on vacation, so we're letting you vote for your favorite Milfington reports on MorningSedition.com, and we're playing the winners. Today is Rapture Watch, but you can go to MorningSedition.com right now to pick your favorite Rapture to watch and stay tuned to hear the winner. Yeah. And also, hopefully, we'll be talking to Brendan McDonald, who is down in Memphis following the Screw the Future revival show, which apparently has a 9-year-old puppet act, who this kid, Noah McCullough, is doing his bit for Bush's Social Security. So it's also like any sort of a savant for presidential trivia. So it's in the revival show, there'll be some proselytizing, there'll be some uplifting talk, and also a freak show, apparently. Now, moving on, we had Ramon drop this off today. He's flying down to Memphis now. He just got in from where were they yesterday? Out there in Kentucky.
Louisville.
So here's Bush's Palm Pilot for today, 7 a.m. Wake up, stay on message. Old people are a bunch of Viagra popping ex hippies who don't know what the hell is good for them. 9:20 a.m. Conversation on Social Security, Cannon Center for the Performing Arts, Memphis. Remember the phrase? Put some lipstick on this pig is not for public consumption. 11 a.m. Call up pal Bill Clinton in the hospital. Tell him I hope everything went well because we're putting strict caps on pain and suffering liability awards. 2 p.m. Conversation on Social Security, Shreveport, Louisiana. Look out a crowd of my supporters. Picture them years from now, old and poor with no means of support. Stifle laughter. 4 p.m. Congratulate the Senate on passing the bankruptcy bill. Note, have Laura take away the twins' Visa cards immediately. 10 p.m. Go to sleep, confident that I will save Social Security for the next several generations of investment bankers. There you go. Let's just say, you know, before we get into the names of the 18 Democratic senators who voted with the Republicans on this, and, you know, you got to understand, this bill is going to screw not just poor people, but anybody, primarily middle-class people. At some point, the middle class will realize this is not a ownership society, but it is a culture of debt. At some point, a lot of middle-class people will wake up and realize that they're poor if you take away, you know, the credit that they have or what they owe in debt. And Tom Harkin, you know, said it best, you know, and I can quote him yesterday. He said, quote, "This is not where we as Democrats ought to be for crying out loud. We are making a terrible mistake by thinking that we can have it both ways. We have to remember where our base is," end quote. Now, Riley, I'm not trying to talk badly about Democrats. I'm just saying that someone has to give them a reality check. Someone has to have them check their, you know what I mean? It's just that we're, you know, obviously, a lot of them are up for re-election. As you were saying, they take for granted the fact that they'd rather be, you know, they think their constituents will vote them in, Democrats will vote them in against a Republican. That's probably true. But it still doesn't mean that they won't be held accountable for voting with Republicans on behalf of the wealthy.
Here's the operative number. Only one elected United States senator between 1982 and 2000, and I'm going to double-check and see whether anything changed in 2002, only one lost a primary between 1982 and 2000. In other words, what these folks are doing, even the ones that are up for re-election in 2006, next year, is a bit of political calculus. What they say is, by 2006, when I'm out on the stump, people won't remember that I voted for this bankruptcy bill, and no one's going to run against me in a Democratic primary because I voted for for this bankruptcy bill.
Well, let's name the guys.
Yeah.
And the gals. Max Baucus, Montana, Evan Bayh, Indiana, Joe Biden, Delaware, Jeff Bingaman, New Mexico, Robert Byrd, West Virginia, Thomas Carper in Delaware, Kent Conrad, North Dakota, Daniel Inouye in Hawaii, Tim Johnson, South Dakota, Inouye.
Daniel Inouye.
Herb Kohl in Wisconsin, Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas, Bill Nelson in Florida, Ben Nelson in Nebraska, Mark Pryor in Arkansas. Harry Reid.
Yes.
Votes with the Republicans. Ken Salazar in Colorado and Debbie Stabenow in Michigan. Now, out of them, you know, Bingaman, Byrd, Carper, Conrad, Cole, Nelson, and Stabenow are up for re-election.
Nelson and Nelson.
Yeah.
Both Nelsons. Because there's a Bill and a Ben.
Well, as we said, the Nebraska, Delaware, Ohio, and we understand that they are bought and owned, that they are owned by credit card companies.
Yeah. Some of these other folks, though, Mark, to be honest with you, it's not real explicable. Now, it may well be that Evan Bayh voted for this thing because he now believes that, you know, he's positioning himself for a run in 2008. You see how you have a couple of folks, and we're going to get into some of this later, who are seemingly moving toward the center. Evan Bayh maybe is one of those people who figures, well, a vote on this might burnish my credentials to run for president in 2008.
Wait, as a Republican?
No, as a Democrat who can make common cause with Republicans under certain circumstances. This is what the Democrats are confronting and are going to have to deal with on some level or another between now and the midterms and now in 2008. How far do you bend over?
But it's crazy to me, Riley, because if all this stuff, goes into law, if, you know, if this bankruptcy thing and the restricting victims' rights, Social Security, I don't think is going to get through. The number of disenfranchised, marginalized people, you know, the number of poor, but also new poor of middle class who have fallen off the cliff is going to be phenomenal. I mean, if they're really thinking ahead, why are they hedging their bets that people who are going to be voting are going to be people that, you know, are wealthy, that, you know, are going to be served by this bankruptcy legislation? I think it's the wrong gamble. I think people are going to become more disenfranchised. The chasm between rich and poor is going to become greater, and the real people that are going to, you know, need Democratic policy are going to outnumber the others for sure.
Here's the calculus again at work. rich people vote in higher numbers than poor people do. They just do.
So wait, then we need a Jesus. We need a Democratic Jesus. We need somebody to come back and be so charismatic and so uplifting that poor people will come out in droves, that the middle class will reassess their real needs.
I'll tell you what scares me about this. This stuff, the class action and this, are now starting to embolden Republicans on the Hill.
Great, that's all we need. More emboldenment. They can just start shooting people.
They figure that they can pass any business-friendly foolishness that comes down the pike. This is emboldening them to believe, some of them, the ones that are fellow travelers with Bush, that they can actually get Social Security through Congress. This is what they're looking at. And of course, there are the judicial nominees that are still coming up. There's a potential nominee to the Supreme Court. These Republicans are thinking two and three steps out on all this stuff.
And Democrats are thinking about tomorrow, the next day.
It seems like they may be thinking about yesterday, the way they've responded to all this.
I think Dean's showing up, and we're going to talk about Hillary Clinton later and her sort of big step to the right, but nonetheless, I think the cause is a worthy cause. I want to talk about that later. We got a buddy on here, a listener who's up early up in there in Somerville, Massachusetts. Rodney, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hey, Rodney.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Pretty good.
I have y'all in my car on my way to school.
Okay.
Listen, I've got a couple things. First of all, we've been talking a lot on the air about, how the Democrats need to get back to their core constituency. I think that some of these guys, they don't think that working people are their constituency. I think some of these guys pay more attention to where they're getting their funding.
And, obviously, yeah.
Investment bankers and finance capital have for a long time actually primarily donated to the Democratic Party.
Yes.
And so, they consider the Democratic Party their wholly owned subsidiary. They play both sides of the game, of course.
Yeah, they all do. That's a good point.
I think, a lot of people got to think about the fact that that's why a lot of people bolted for Nader and the Green Party.
That's right.
In the last couple of elections.
That's right.
This whole argument that, they got to pick their battles is just hogwash.
You're absolutely right, Rodney.
I got to tell you, they got,
Let's fight them all.
Yeah, well, you got to fight them all, and if you're going to lose the battle, that means that you took the stand.
Exactly, and at least that'll be on the record.
Look at how Kerry got the war all over his face because he voted for it, and then he said he's sort of against and back and forth. He lost a lot of votes.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Namby-pamby, wishy-washy stuff.
All right, Rodney, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rodney. Hey. I got a quick question for you.
For me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last time they brought this up in front of the Senate, this bankruptcy bill, similar bill.
Yeah.
The one that Chuck Schumer poison pill
right.
with the anti-abortion thing, okay? That passed the Senate 85-13. Now, this one was 74-25. Is that progress to you? Yeah, exactly.
Man.
That's exactly the point.
It's just like, it just scares me that what he was saying, what Rodney was saying, and what we say here is really true, is that, the disconnect between, working people and politicians is so extreme now that you really start to realize, like, they're just completely two different realities. All they want to do is use people to further their own careers and really, for the most part, create this weird balance that, sort of like distracts regular people from the fact that they're just, all they care about is business.
Let me tell you something. What the Congress of the United States has done, and these Democrats are complicit in this, is that they have treated the working people of this country like recalcitrant children. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing.
And they've also created that. They want that. They've made them children.
Yeah. You are being irresponsible. Too many of you are declaring bankruptcy and not paying your debts. Now, actual numbers of people that do this, they don't really get into
it. And when people get angry, they go, there's terrorists. Be afraid. Oh, let that override any of your economic responsive, your economic dire straits. Let it override any sort of fears you might have about your own personal life. Be afraid. That's why they got so many people to vote for them. So many people voted against their own economic interests because they were convinced that they were to be frightened and that the only way that they could not be frightened anymore was not to change the leader.
Now they're going. This bankruptcy bill is going to sail through the House. It's due, I guess, to be considered next month.
Mm-hmm.
It will sail through the House, and Bush will have it signed probably sometime before Memorial Day.
Uh-huh.
And Americans are going to find Americans in financial distress, in genuine financial distress, are going to find themselves having to make some really hard choices because they didn't make the hard choices at the ballot box last November.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about this a little more, I think, when we come back. We got your dog of the week coming up.
Yeah.
It looks like there, you know, there's some people calling as well. Maybe we'll take a couple calls on there. And you know, we're going to talk a little bit about Hillary. It's 46 yeah. past the hour on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition,
the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Sir America Radio's Morning Sedition. Wow, the difference between public progressive radio and big time, you know, regular radio is that, man, you know, some of the ads, you know, they're selling ads downtown. We're just doing our job here, man. There's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. One, observe Poison Prevention Awareness Month by urging people not to swallow this administration's lies. Two, try to blame your latest emotional meltdown on global warming. Three, stand outside Bush's Social Security revival show with a sign that says, we could solve our energy problems just by tapping Bush's snake oil. Yow! Four, ride around on public transportation ostentatiously reading Noam Chomsky or Howard Zinn and muttering loudly, so right. So very right. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. If 50 Cent opens one of Bush's privatized Social Security accounts, by the time he retires, he'll be 35 Cent. Wake up, sheeple. Bush is the real gangsta. All right, we got some calls lined up, but
yeah,
right
sure
now
do.
It's time for... Yes,
oh,
it's that time. It's Mark Riley's Dog of the Week, maybe. We're moving towards the Dog of the Week.
Oh, yeah,
here we go. What do you got there, Mark?
Our Dog of the Week this week defines the question, what is he thinking? His name is Jim Gibbons, and he's a congressman from Reno, Nevada. He's also transformed himself from an ordinary Bush toady to a fire-breathing menace. Worse still, he could be the front-runner to become Nevada's next governor.
Mm.
This is a guy who characterized people who objected to public financing of the last inaugural as communists. Yes, in the 21st century, Jim Gibbons thinks it's cool to red bait, but that's not the worst of his transgressions. Last week, Jim Gibbons gave a speech at a Lincoln Day dinner in his home state. To call it a tirade is to risk gross understatement.
Mm.
Here's a quote. I say we tell those liberal tree-hugging, Birkenstock-wearing, tie-dyed liberals to go make their movies and music and wine somewhere else, end quote. Now, of course, he used liberal twice in the same sentence, but what? Hey, I quibble. The speech lashed out at pro-choice and anti-war Americans as well. Ordinarily, this would just be more neocon hype. But Jim Gibbons didn't write the speech he gave last week. He stole it. Wholesale from Alabama State Auditor Beth Chapman, who delivered the same rant 2 years ago. Turns out Gibbons plagiarized 15 of Chapman's 21 paragraphs. Joe Biden stole a single line, and it killed his chance to be president. We don't know if Jim Gibbons is a future governor of Nevada or not. We do know he's the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
And he didn't even feel bad about it. That's,
freaking moron.
You think it's okay to appropriate without quoting.
Yeah.
One thing to misquote.
Well, you know what his excuse was?
What?
I didn't know it was copyrighted.
But what the hell difference is that? That doesn't dismiss the fact from being a disingenuous, unoriginal, you know, thief.
Hack!
Of,
hack!
Thief of words. Hey, Matt in Kansas, what's on your mind, Matt?
Hey, good morning, guys. I was listening to the young man that called in earlier. He hit it right on the head. The Democratic Party has had to reach for funding in places where they shouldn't have to. I'm a union guy. I've been a union guy for 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
The destruction of organized labor through the GOP is what's hurting this party. And the only thing I know we can do about it is what I'm doing, and this is what everybody needs to do. Every time I get a check, Howard Dean gets a check. It's not a big one, but it's set up electronically. It comes right out of my checking account. And if we would all do that, I don't care if it's $100, if it's $2, if we all band together and help fund this party, we can get our message out.
Wow, you know what? That's a good idea.
No, he's absolutely right.
Thanks a lot, Matt. That's an inspirational call.
And you know what? You know, we had a dog of the week. If we had a caller of the week, Matt from Kansas would be him.
It's a great idea. You know, now I got to start doing it. I felt a little guilty. I'm like, wow, maybe I need to be doing more. And the other thing you can do also is cut up your credit cards. You know what I mean? Get rid of them. Get rid of all of them. I'll give it a try. But the weird thing is, there are some places that are like, oh, we don't take cash.
Cash.
What is cash?
Well, you know what they do?
What?
They make you pay extra for paying cash.
What is the world becoming, Riley?
I don't know.
Let's take another call. Peter, listening in Seneca Falls. Peter?
Hey, guys.
Hey Peter.
Guys, good morning.
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 What's going on?
I'm calling about the bankruptcy bill.
Good.
And I just wanted to point out that we've got this 800-pound gorilla of the fact that really, geopolitically, we are sitting at the brink of what a lot of people call peak oil.
Uh-huh, right. We're running out, yeah.
The United States is just in dire straits. The economy is getting ready to tank, and the financial institutions understand this.
Okay.
Our Congress is being the puppet to the corporations that they are lining up behind them and allowing them to relieve them of the responsibility to take care of the debts or be saddled with the bankruptcies that are going to be heading their way.
All right, so you're saying that this is really just the economic institutions protecting themselves from the inevitable crash of the economy.
Bingo.
All right, thanks, Peter. That's an interesting topic. That's an interesting call. Look, hey, if you want to go to, you can go to democracyforamerica.com to make recurring contributions. We'll put a link to that on morningsedition.com, where there's also links to many other things. That's an interesting argument that Peter makes. If you really believe, which you should, that the financial institutions are really the secret dark forces that run the world, that they would have this much foresight, it is an interesting sort of idea, isn't it, Riley?
Well, you know, we can, and one of the things that comes out of Peter's statement is the following question. We know who holds our debt, the credit card companies, the banks, whoever. Who holds America's debt? And believe me, we're in the hole. Saudi Arabia. Some of these folks are holding huge amounts of American paper. Huge amounts. What happens if they call it due?
I guess we start working for China.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe that'll help. Maybe they'll be in China going, oh no, made in America.
Not good. We don't want that.
So look, it looks like the callings are happening. 866-303-2027. We're gonna take a little bit of a break, and people are excited about this stuff. We're gonna talk about Hillary when we come back, and a lot more stuff. Hey, Riley.
That's right. We're gonna talk bankruptcy and Hillary on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. The facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition, don't be stupid. It feels like thinking, Mark Riley.
It sure does.
To all you geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes and progressive utopians out there. Look, there's a protest down in Memphis. People were listening to WWTQ 680 AM. Get out to High Point Pinch parking lot at 111 Jackson, north of the Cannon Center, starting at 7 AM, which is now, they're probably still pulling it together now in Memphis. Go to MidSouthPeace.org for more information. Mark Maron, that's me. I'm Mark Maron. I'll be at Cobb's Comedy Club April 1st and 2nd. So all you people listening to 960 AM, The Quake in San Francisco, come on down and check it out or make the trip from somewhere else.
We're going to Memphis later, aren't we?
I hope so.
I think we may be.
Oh, you mean Brendan McDonald is definitely down in Memphis. We know that he's there. He called us over the break. He's set up at the Cannon Center. We'll be talking to him at 8 o'clock or 8:30 or somewhere. It doesn't make any difference what hour it is to some people out there because the hours are all changing. But we are going to talk to him in the next hour. What else have we got later in the show? Author Anne Lamott is going to join us in the studio. She is a progressive liberal Christian woman. It's one of those things, Riley, where I get a lot of flack for what people think, marginalizing all Christians. But as you and I know, it's just the Christo-fascist zombie brigades of the neocon death cult that I find disturbing. And this woman's going to share a little bit about how her progressive Christian faith helped her through some hard times and obviously through this last election. Now, where are we? Where are we going? I'm serious.
Is that what it took?
Yeah, it did. I mean,
it took faith, huh?
She turned to the big man in the sky, or the big thing, or the Buddha, or the whatever, the Jesus, the whatever you use. You know what I mean? A small cartoon dog. It doesn't make any difference in that world. So, anyways, look, and I'm not saying that to you. I'm just saying belief. And faith. And now, see, every time I open my mouth about this, I get into this spiral. It's good. You know, you want to believe. You want to have faith. But, you know, be rational. For God's sakes, be rational. We've got a bunch of callers lined up here, and we're talking about the Democrats. We're talking about Democrats that align themselves with Republicans in this bankruptcy legislation, which is heinous. It's heinous. And if I could quote Tom Harkin, quote, "This is not where we as Democrats ought to be, for crying out loud. We are making a terrible mistake by thinking that we can have it both ways. We have to remember where our base is." Max Baucus of Montana, Evan Bayh of Indiana, Joe Biden of Delaware, Jeff Bingaman of New Mexico, Robert Byrd of West Virginia, Thomas Carper of Delaware, Kent Conrad of North Dakota, Daniel, how do you pronounce it?
Inouye.
Inouye of Hawaii, Tim Johnson of South Dakota, Herb Cole of Wisconsin, Mary Landro of Louisiana, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, Bill Nelson of Florida, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Mark Pryor of Arkansas, Harry Reid, the main guy of Nevada, Ken Salazar in Colorado, and Debbie Stabenow in Michigan. Why, oh, why did you vote with them? Now, here's the other question. Hillary Clinton on the Capitol steps with Joe Lieberman, Rick Santorum, and that guy Sam Brownback, who's the worst of the worst from Kansas,
yeah.
Just a religious fanatic, you know, and now a lot of people are going to flack, you know, Hillary is, you know, she's moving way to the right, she's doing this, she's doing that. I'll tell you one thing honestly, despite whatever Hillary was doing, and I was tooting her horn last week, and, you know, and I was also tooting Joe Biden's horn, very disappointed in Mr. Biden, you know, and Hillary, I never know what's going to happen with her, but I think that what they're trying to do here and what they want to instigate in terms of researching the effect of media on children's behavior is, I think they're missing the boat, but I think this is some interesting stuff to me.
It is interesting stuff. Look, we need to know more about how changes in technology affect the behavior and the activities of children. And in many cases, changes in technology that were aimed at adults have unintended consequences on our kids.
Well, right, exactly. And I think that, you know, one of the things is well, this can be trivialized as like, you know, the violence. They're talking about video games. They're talking about iPods. They're talking about computers. They're talking about TVs in the room. They're talking about, you know, it's really exploiting some, you know, fears of that parents have that they are not going to be able to adapt to the technology in the way their kids are. So they have no control over what's going into their kids' heads, which you don't anyways. But let me tell you something. What's going into the kids' heads on some level in terms of the accessibility of pornography, you know, is a real thing. And without stifling anyone's rights, there has to be some question as to the effect. You know, I know a lot of parents are like, my kids are very well adjusted. They know more than kids ever did. But how's their conscience? How is their ability to be empathetic in the real world? How is this affecting their psychological processes? How are they interacting with real people? Violence has actually gone down. So the whole idea of connecting video games and violent movies to violence is a moot point. And part of the reason is the kids apparently aren't leaving their bedroom. But aside from that, I mean, I am curious. I remember I asked Dr. Drew, who we had on the show, you know, towards the beginning, because he was talking about the effects of the education that kids get about sex through pornography, which is, you know, readily available. You know, look, if I can do it, I'm a computer moron. I imagine any kid is, you know, knows enough to get around parental controls or whatever. What effect is all this having on their innocence, on their psyche, on how they walk through the world and deal with situations?
You know, they did a study a few years ago, Mark, and this is fascinating because it wasn't really about young people committing actual violence. But what they did was take a group of young people who used video games where they had to shoot at a target. And they compared their hit rate and shooting at that target to police officers who were using actual guns and target practice and compared the two. And as it turns out, the kids scored much, much better than the cops did. Huh. In other words, it's not something that necessarily leads to violence, But what ends up happening is these kids who spend their time doing this develop extraordinary motor skills and hand-eye coordination.
All right, but what about the conscience to go along with that?
That's the issue.
These are the issues that I'm worried about. And, you know, whether or not, you know, obviously we're having some problems with Hillary in terms of, you know, moving to the right. And we're having, obviously, a lot more problems with all the senators, you know, all of these Democratic senators that voted alongside the Republicans, that they no longer care about people, that they only care about big business and business interests, and they're willing to just manipulate people just like the Republicans are in order to get the votes they need. And that's a big problem we're going to have to face about the Democratic Party and dealing with this horrendous, you know, pig pack of bullies that is the neocon death cult, that is the new Republican Congress, that, you know, and just, you know, what can we do? And we're taking some calls. We got Greg on the line in Florida. How are you, Greg?
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Mark Square. How you doing?
Good, all man. Right. What's up?
Hey, listen, we got to do something as people.
Okay. Got any ideas?
Have a general strike.
Yeah.
Across the country.
Okay.
All the working men and women in this country. Or we have like a million working men march.
Yeah.
From Washington.
Okay. You from Boston? You don't sound Florida.
Yeah, I'm from Boston. I'm down in Florida right now. Sorry about the phone connection. It was great that you guys got me up.
That's okay.
Well, you know, I think that's a good idea, Greg, and certainly they tried these things before, but actually to get people to mobilize out of their daily routine, I mean, for God's sakes, it seems that the ability to focus on our side sometimes is a little difficult because, you know, we have all have our personal agendas. We all have things we want to do. We have commercial auditions. We have meals to prepare. We have to go to, a meeting for our work. We have to, you know, whatever it is, you know, I get the feeling that on the other side, there are people that only think about the agenda all day long.
Well, let me tell you something, Mark. I remember very clearly the impact in South Africa of general strikes that were called by the various unions. They had an organization called COSATU, which was the Coalition of South African Trade Unions. And they used to call, this is during apartheid, they would call periodic general strikes. Now, what that meant in South Africa was nobody was working the mines. And, of course, they were real tough about enforcing these strikes, keeping people out and off their jobs. But the point that the last caller made about the possibilities of a large-scale worker strike, which has never really been accomplished successfully in this country, something to think about.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the problem is that the Republicans have infiltrated, you know, the trade unions. They've crumpled them because of their policy that they've made them. They're trying to render them ineffectual completely. You know, and with outsourcing and everything else, there's a powerlessness among the unions that is very disturbing. And they've also, you know, dividing and conquering all these different communities. So there isn't the mobilization. People are not only apathetic, they feel, you know, powerless. Even when, you know, there's this big call for strikes, it's hard to get everybody on the same page because their anger isn't focused properly.
Yeah,
know?
No, you're right. And I think what may have to happen is that in this country, because the unions don't just represent memberships, they represent humongous amounts of money that are invested in this country through the pension funds. It may well be, because remember, the unions spoke out to some
against
of these...
Social Security.
Against
right,
Social Security.
That was great.
It may well be that the unions are going to have to take that idea and go further with it and say, you know what, we're not going to invest our pension funds in any company, in any investment that is going to act against the best interests of our workers.
I hope you're right. Now, there's a strike that could really make a difference. We're going to come back and talk about how the Hispanic community is disengaging a bit from the Democratic Party, you know, which is troubling because, you know, minority have always been, you know, underneath the Democrats' umbrella, and you know, there's some issues here with the Hispanic community that we're gonna talk about when we come back. It's 16 past the hour on Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Man! I hope I don't buy that iPod this week, Caleb. Anyways, I don't want to get into that right now, but I got a feeling like I got nothing to do. I'm going to see that David Mamet play on Saturday. We talked to Bob Balaban yesterday. I'm going to go see Romance Saturday night by myself. Yeah, whatever. You know, I'm not trying to make my wife feel guilty. You know why? Because she's sleeping. She's not listening to it right now in L.A. Anyways, I'm not aggravated. Aggravated? Is that a new word? It's a hybrid.
Close enough.
Anger. So here's my therapist. I went to him yesterday, and I think he should start paying me. I'm entertaining him too much. I swear to God, the last 5 minutes of my session, he was laughing, enjoying himself, and I said, look, I want a discount. This is ridiculous. I don't know who's working for who here, but here's my dream from last night. I'm in Alaska at the Iditarod dog race with my dead cat Butch and her cat Army. Hundreds of sled dogs are barking, and it's so cold that my nose is running and the snot is freezing to my upper lip. Butch has on a big fur hat and says to the cats, comrades, we will rescue this race from the fascist dogs. I say, Butch, there's no way a bunch of cats can win against these big huskies. No way. Let's go home. My toes are blue. She says, Mark Maron, there are many definitions of the word win. Leave it to me. And she spits with this weird look on her face. So I don't see Butch until the next morning, and she's smiling and whistling. Always a bad sign. I say, where have you been? What'd you do? Butch shrugs. I made the race more interesting. So all the dogs are lined up at the starting line next to Butch and her cat sled. The gun goes off, but none of the dogs start running. The mushers are screaming at the dogs, but all these big huskies just stand around barking really slowly and staring at their paws and rolling over on their backs and getting their bellies rubbed. Butch pops a capsule under her nose and yells, onward, comrades, to the future! And Butch and the cat sled take off across the snow and disappear over the horizon. Everyone back at the starting line is freaking out while the dogs hug and lick each other. The next day, the local newspaper runs a front-page story. Iditarod dogs dosed with ecstasy. Police seek suspects. My cell phone rings. Mark Maron, I am looking at the northern lights. How can anything be so beautiful? I woke up and my bed was filled with glaciers, right? Glaciers. Big glaciers in the bed. Glaciers in the bed.
Uh-oh.
Am I going to buy the iPod? Am I going to buy it? Am I not going to buy it? I'm looking forward to the play. But let's get back to the task at hand, my friend. The flailing, not flailing, but the sort of groundless, anchorless Democrats. I mean, to the point where we talked about this yesterday, we're going to continue talking about it in a way that Lou Dobbs doesn't.
Yeah, right.
Man, every time we come in, they're running a repeat of Lou Dobbs, and he's just like, we don't even have the sound. And you can just hear him going, there are Mexicans in my drawers, people. There's a Mexican in my living room. There are Mexicans in my closet. What are we going to do about this problem? Yeah. Right now, I have Mexicans under the desk. Can you see them? The Mexicans are coming, folks.
Our porous borders.
Can you be as racist and as publicly, xenophobic? Is he what you would call a Latinophobe? I mean, what is with Lou Dobbs and his, like, complete paralysis and angry fear of Mexicans?
My guess is he won't be meeting with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus anytime soon.
Well, I mean, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, you know, they are calling a meeting with the Democrats because that they are not being honored. Their needs aren't being honored, and that Kerry dropped the ball with them. I mean, really, look, we have some...
Uh-oh.
I mean, I have, like, in response to Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, has launched some new Hispanic outreach initiatives. But a memo distributed to Democratic politicians with phrases to include in speeches only made the problem worse. Okay? I don't know if you remember this, but we managed to obtain a copy of a memo. And, you can see what made some people upset, you know, because the Hispanic caucus anger at the Democratic Party is real. I mean, listen to some of these lines that they were using as talking points to put in their reach out to Hispanics. You know, here's one. Thank you for taking the job no one else wants. Is that bad? This is wrong. Your votes are important. Why not think of election as Martes Gigante?
Oh, God.
Election day, no? Your children are beautiful. Are they all yours? Is that wrong?
Hi, Lou.
Hey, how about that Sammy Sosa? Another icebreaker. I mean, this is why the Democrats seem insensitive. You know what I mean? Come be in our gang. That's, you know, horrible. It's horrible. It's just horrible, okay? I'll push for the raise in minimum wage for those of you on the books. This is why the Democrats are missing the ball on this and why Lou Dobbs is you know, bad. Go ahead,
remember, Mark, I told you after the election last year that both the black and Latino caucuses in Congress and black and Latino communities generally needed a reexamination of their relationship with the Democratic Party, and that reexamination needed to be initiated by the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that didn't happen. It got to the point where the Latinos were talking about withholding their dues to the party in order to get that meeting, in order to start the process of reexamination. That's one of the inherent weaknesses of the Democratic Party. it's, you know, they only put out fires. They don't anticipate that, you know, a room full of cotton might start one.
Yeah.
That's the problem. They got to reach out to people. They got to say, okay, now what's the problem? Let's sit down. Let's thrash it out where we can do things differently. Let's look at doing things differently. They should have initiated that discussion. They shouldn't be waiting for people to withhold their dues in order to and get to crisis levels in order for it to be addressed.
And also how the Republicans have hijacked the second-generation immigrant experience is that it looks a lot like, you know, personal triumph. It looks a lot like, you know, personal empowerment that, you know, the second-generation immigrants look down at new immigrants. You know, there's two ways you can go with that. Either, like, I've made it in this country, you know, screw you, you're not like me, or you can help them. You know, that's a liberal way, like with the Jewish people in the 60s, you know, they knew what it was like to be an immigrant, so they had a liberal mind, and now a lot of these younger Hispanics and second generation Hispanics are like, you know, screw these immigrants.
Well, yeah, and they're also looking at it from the perspective of a business owner rather than a worker, and that's
okay.
A very important distinction. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We got a whole lot more for you.
Air America Radio.
Yes.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Whether it's...
past the hour. It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're having a time here. We're taking a couple calls. It looks like we got a call from Bruce. Bruce in Arkansas. What do you got to say, buddy?
Hi, Mark and Mark.
Yeah.
Well, once again, the liberal media spinning the truth for your own narrow, misguided.
Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, no. I hate when... help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no. It's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservatives' way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons. It's 10 past the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Halliburton, wait till you see what we've got planned for Syria. Hey, guess who's back in the hospital? That's right, Bill Clinton. Bubba's having some fluid removed. Oh, yeah. Beat it, beat you to it, loser. Oh, I'm having complications of my quadruple bypass. I helped people hurt by the tsunami. I'm so special. Can I have a cheeseburger? You've had enough cheese, Bubba. Why don't you be a real man and give Bush Sr. your hospital bed, huh? I think you should sleep on the floor. Permanently. Hey, how about W's pick for UN ambassador, John Bolton? He hates the UN almost as much as Mark the Shark does. That's right, Bolton. Aim for the blue helmet. Nice one, Bolton. Hey, what do you think about the oil for food program? Yeah, I love this guy. Oh, I'm Kofi Annan. I don't want to pay my parking tickets. I'm a fancy pants. Didn't you love me in Driving Miss Daisy? John Bolton, I think I'm in love. Hey, it's 12 past the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Oh, those damn liberals, feminazis.
That's right. Right you are, caller. Right you are. The minimum wage should be lower. That's why it's called minimum. Am I right? Am I right? Huh? Huh? All right, I guess we should give a Haji six figures to hand me my lunch. And yeah, I would like fries with that. Chop, chop! Hey, it's 13 after the hour. Time for the Neocon Power Weather Forecast. I predict a steady drip, drip, drip from Bill Clinton's IV. Lance, what do you got in there, Tubba? Mazzola? You've been sharked! Stick around, we'll be back to Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Man, I think it's like a migraine problem. Is it a migraine problem?
Was I don't know, man. This blanking out.
I know. I hate when it happens on the air. You covered for me, though, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So let's get back into this, the Hispanic disenfranchisement, the self-imposed disenfranchisement of the Hispanics from the Democratic Party. We talked about it yesterday. Can we talk a little bit about this sort of like what I was trying to get at before the break, which is there is a second-generation, third-generation immigrant sort of resentment towards new immigrants because these people have been here for a couple of generations, if not at least one. And what happens is they go into business. They are integrated into, what is, as what they feel is, working Americans and whatnot. And there is a sort of, kind of a schism. Is there not between generations of immigrants?
Well, it depends on where, in some cases, the immigrants come from. But it is part of a process, Mark. The fact is that immigrant Americans, in the most general sense, start businesses at much higher levels than native-born Americans do. In other words, that second and third generation, in many instances, goes into some entrepreneurial enterprise. Those who are successful at it, those who end up running, for example, the immigrant groups that run grocery store chains, that run the newsstands here in New York, those kinds of things, eventually they get to a point where they become affluent, and then they turn back and look at immigrants who are coming in some instances from different classes than they came
right.
from, or in some instances from different regions of the same country that they come from. And, in many instances, you have immigrant countries that people emigrate from where there are vast differences based on geography, based on background, and those sorts of things. So, in other words, if a group of people from one class of folks in a particular country come here and become successful, they look at the people behind them. For example, in Cuba, the Cuban Americans that were in Miami deeply resented the Cubans that came as a result of the Mariel Boatlift,
mm-hmm.
who came because those were the criminals. Those were the Cubans, and in many instances, those were also dark-skinned Cubans, as opposed to many of the light-skinned Cubans who had migrated before.
But it's interesting, too, what you have here is this sort of like, I started with nothing, I came here, my parents came here, I worked my way up. That sort of thinking sort of meshes with the Republican agenda in a way. And that's why, on some level, the interests of, new immigrants and second or third generation immigrants who are integrated into the business world and have been here for a while is a weird schism, difficult schism for the Democratic Party to sort of, it's another hurdle that they have to make in order to keep the community under the Democrats' umbrella.
Well, yeah, and the other part of it is, of course, that many immigrants, and this is not just recent immigrants, historically, become very grateful to the country because they live better lives here than they would have had they stayed where they came from. As a result, if they see other immigrant groups, even from their own countries, coming into the country without that attitude, then they have a problem. Then it's like, well, this worked for me. It should be able to work for you. You shouldn't be on welfare. You shouldn't have to use social services. You shouldn't have to deal with some of the things that extreme poverty among immigrants ends up forcing them to do.
It's interesting, too, because the contempt is almost deeper than a broad contempt of people that are accused of draining the system by Republicans. The contempt is deeper because on some level they're like, you're representing me too.
Well, yeah, there is that, and there's also the question of legality. What you find is second generation immigrants say, well, hey, my parents came here legally. They don't really get into the fact that maybe when their parents or their grandparents came, the law was different. But what they say is, hey, I came here under the law, therefore people even from my own neighborhood who came illegally are, don't deserve to be here. They need to get out of the country. Simple as that.
So this is just another issue that the Democrats have to wrangle with. And now we've got to, just on basic issues, just on this issue of bankruptcy, you have all these, Democrats aligning themselves with Republicans. And now there's so many challenges that have to be met. And we can't even get them to pull together on something that should be, all these battles should be fought. Max Cleland is wrong. That sort of issue of, we got to pick our battles. It's wrong. They should all stand together on this stuff. and bring these people back. I don't know how they're going to bring the Hispanic community back, because there's another faction of the Hispanic community, the La Raza, that we were talking about yesterday, who are, you know, supporting Alberto Gonzalez. You know, it's just it's a fragmentation that is going to be, you know, among other challenges, a huge challenge for the Democrats to win back that particular community. And now the Republicans are trying to make inroads in the black community. They only got, what, 11% of the vote?
11%,
but they're trying, and you know, this is a problem.
Well, see, what the Republicans understood that the Democrats don't, and Mark, you brought this up in the immediate aftermath of the election. It's worth repeating. The Republicans looked at the state of Ohio and saw Bush go up from 9% to 16%, and suddenly they realized, we won Ohio because some blacks decided to vote Republican. That's where you start. And then you set a goal. We want to get 30% of the black vote nationally. And they go about the business as an incumbent party. They go about the business of using the strings of the incumbency to reach out to that community. The Democrats, unfortunately, are not in the same position in terms of reaching out to the Latino community. But that doesn't mean they cannot reach out or should not reach out. They have to go and meet people where they are and understand that, yes, the Latino community may be conflicted about immigration, that the standard line about immigration doesn't work in all Latino immigrant communities. But most important, Latinos want input. They want decision-making input inside the Democratic Party, and it's something that they don't think they're getting now, and it will be a continuing sore spot between Latinos and the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and it's just it still strikes me as is ultimately what's going to happen, what we stand to gain if Democrats stand together, is that, you know, them hedging their bets that, you know, ultimately Republican policy will pay off on the business side, you know, is wrong. Because I think that, as I've said before, the number of disenfranchised people, marginalized people, middle-class people who fall through the cracks is going to be huge. And the real people they need to represent are people with human concerns, not people with business concerns. And I think if they reach out in a concerted effort to do that, that they will succeed, you know, in 2006 and the next presidential election.
And Democrats are going to have to start looking and saying to the Latino community, look, yeah, there are some Republicans that are reaching out to you, but in the end, they're still going to treat you like an immigrant. Look at what they actually do. Look at what they advocate for, and ask yourself if that really is in your interest.
And also, we need to take some Democrats with some courage to get out there and really make the connection for people between their particular hard times and Republican policy.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is like the real crux of it. It's a very simple thing. Like, the great example is in this article we have here about the difference in the black death rate and the white death rate because of health care, because of inaccessibility to health care, and because of the way the healthcare system is designed and the way that this administration makes, you know, Medicare cuts and Medicaid cuts and then also, you know, panders to big pharmaceutical companies to make it so the drugs are unaffordable. It's having an adverse effect, and it's on the black community.
Well, yeah, it does, because if you have to choose between your pills and your food, people choose the food.
And no one should live that way, and that is a direct repercussion of Republican policy. We're going to talk more about this. We've got a lot of calls on the phone. We're taking calls about, you know, what the Democrats need to do and your own personal Latino disenfranchisement from the Democratic Party. 866-303-2270 is the number. We'll be back. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the morning tradition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here. It's Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's a morning's edition on Air America Radio. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270 about Latino disenfranchisement from the Democratic Party. Also, just broader Democratic themes that we've been talking about all morning. On the phone, we have the chairman of the Democratic Committee in Southampton, Benny in Long Island. How are you?
Hey, Benny.
How you doing?
All right.
Good. What's on your mind?
It's a pleasure. Well, we have a number of serious problems. And if you have some really concentrated, like in the Bronx, you have concentrated power in the Bronx. So they're more the exception than the rule in terms of having a voice, okay?
The Latino voice, yeah.
Absolutely. Other than the Bronx and certain parts of Brooklyn, there's no real voice. No one calls us and asks us for our opinions and anything. And even when we do make phone calls, we're calling the state or any other part of the Democratic Party, we never get the call back.
Okay, so you think this is happening sort of nationwide?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that's a bigger problem. And understand that you know with the Democratic Party as well, it's really top-down, the decisions and everything else, and it's not definitely not bottom-up. And I'm at the local level, so, you know, I'm never going to be heard.
Well, right. You know, it's interesting, Benny, because you make a very telling point, because the chair of the New York State Democratic Committee is a black man who represents a predominantly Latino district.
Well, you know, we've had that happen many different times. But again, try to put a phone call over there, and I've done.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I know you're 100% right. It's just ironic that you don't always get better service from some, you know, from an organization because the head of the organization is a person of color.
Well, you know that doesn't make a difference. I mean, we have Gonzalez in them, and they really don't even represent us. And he's Latino, so I'm totally aware of that.
Yeah, but, now Benny, what do you think of La Raza, the National Council of La Raza, reaching out and embracing Alberto Gonzalez?
Well, maybe it's because of his ethnicity in terms of where he comes from. I see no other reason other than that because, you know, most of them are from the same region. So it might be because, you know, as we call it, the brotherhood. But
it must be that because some people come from a history of countries where, you know, Republican-backed torturous regimes is what got them to this country in the first place.
That is so true, and that's one thing that a lot of people don't understand. And I see those type of people here, and once I hear them, I'm like, oh, you're part of that repressive government, the ones that, you know, shake the people down constantly and in other words, you got to be part of the group in order to get anything done or
right.
to have money. So, mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for your call, Benny.
Thanks, Benny. Yeah, now, it's interesting how he reacted to the La Raza thing. La Raza, the National Council of La Raza, huge umbrella organization representing different Latino activist groups across the country, embraced Alberto Gonzalez, first by endorsing him for the Attorney General's gig, and then endorsing him publicly, embracing him publicly at an awards dinner.
And also, Benny brings up a good point that I didn't think of yesterday. See, I automatically thought that a lot of people came that left the countries in Central America that, you know, had the torturous, you know, sort of dictatorships that were backed by the United States Republican Party, that I automatically assumed that they were victims. And Benny, you know, brings up an interesting point where it's like some of them could have been on the other side.
Well, you know, so there was that story with some of the death squad people ending up here in the
right,
States from Honduras.
This guy makes perfect sense to them. My, you know, Kalo, I hate you. I hate you. This, what do you bring bacon into the studio? You're sitting. What did you get? An entire.
You smelled
bacon?
That, didn't you?
What do you mean smell it? I think I got bacon grease on my face from the air is like thick with bacon grease. What are you trying to do? I already won the bet. Now I'm still not eating the meat, but this is horrendous. Oh my God! I hope you're enjoying it. It smells great.
You got cheese on there, Kalo?
It's delicious.
Oh.
I'm about to break down. We got a call in Fort Lauderdale. Amy, good morning. What's on your mind, Amy? Bacon?
Hi, Amy.
You thinking about bacon by any chance?
No.
Okay.
Just a little bit of a different twist. I grew up in a Democratic family.
Mm-hmm.
I was a recipient of welfare and food stamps. I was a single parent. Well, you know what? All that Democratic help helped me get to where I got to.
Yeah.
When I became successful, I switched parties. I became a Republican because I didn't want to pay any more taxes than I had to.
Right.
However, as I continued to educate myself about government and everything, I had to go back to being a Democrat.
Wow, that's a great story.
That is a great story.
Thanks a lot for
you know what?
What? Why do you? Yeah.
You know what? I need people that need the help that I needed to get that help so that they can get to where I am today.
Wow, that is a very, you know, that, I'm choked up a little bit. Thank you very much, Amy.
That's an important
call.
Point Amy makes for the following reason. It is in the interest of all of us that people in the worst positions in the society succeed. We may think like we're putting out our money for this and we're spending our tax dollars for this and that and the other, but the fact of the matter is the more people that are contributing in our society, the better it is for everyone in the society.
And don't underestimate the tremendous human feeling of actually helping somebody. That, you know, what you get from giving, you know, from helping somebody that needs help, or for being there for somebody, you know, when they need help, you know, it's there's nothing like it. I mean, it's a uniquely, it's not even unique. It's the way humans should behave, but the reward of it is profound and deep.
It's lightning in a bottle. It is a feeling that you're not alone in the world.
That's right. If only we get the Democrats to figure out that that's what they need to do again, is actually help people and realize that the rewards are there on all levels. As you were showing us, Mark Riley, that not only on an economic level and on a cultural level, but on a personal level.
Yeah, it does. And that story that Amy just told is replicated thousands of times in this society, not the switching back and forth between parties, but certainly someone using, whether it's welfare, food stamps, the Head Start program, any number of these programs that people have used to get a little bit of an economic leg up in society, and eventually they end up making it.
It's like people forget why people are special, why they, you know, why human beings and human, charity,
humankind,
and kindness is important. That bacon is killing me.
Yeah, it is.
Oh my God, Kayla, what'd you do to me?
Cashman!
All right, we're going to talk to Brendan down in Memphis when we come back, and we got Anne Lamott to talk about liberal progressive Christianity later in the hour.
That's right. We got a whole lot more for you, so stay with us. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Morning Sedition. It's Friday. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
Good morning, Kalo the Costco, who is like, what, you're putting bacon under my nose? You're waving the bacon sandwich around by my mic, knowing full well that I already won the bet, my friend. I'm still off the meat, and I've been off the Splenda for like 3 weeks. I'm barely drinking any Diet Coke. Look at me. I'm pure. I'm pure, Kalo. Clutch Larson in the studio. How are you, Clutch?
I'm pretty good.
And Dan Passman is here, too, because we want to hear about what's going on for the weekend. Are you going to be crocking?
Oh, there will be crocking this weekend, absolutely.
What are you crocking?
I'm going to crock a whole chicken. I want to get my game perfect for the presentation I'm going to do here next week.
That, by the way, if you missed out, we're lightening it up now because it's Friday. We have 2 hours. We've covered everything that's important in the world. We're having a little time to ourselves here. Look at Kalo's bacon-eating face. Look at the bacon-eating face. And the fact that I almost said the F word. All right, here we go. So you're going to crock because next week you're going to do a presentation. You're bringing in the crock pot to crock a chicken without liquid.
Exactly.
It defies you to do that. What is going on in here? It did become The View.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Mark. Real quick, though.
Are you really sorry?
You knew
no, he's not.
I need to, also this week is my girlfriend's birthday, so happy birthday to my girlfriend, Janie.
Happy birthday, Janie.
Sorry, ladies. I'm spoken for.
God bless you, Janie. God
ladies
bless you for
anyway.
Taking this one off the market, even temporarily. You got your work cut out for you. I can't even imagine. It's like, wait, could you not sit on the chair like that? Okay, that's better.
That's better, yeah.
Oh, no, don't put that glass. Are you going to, oh, now I got to clean it.
You know. He's off the showroom floor.
He's blushing. Look at Fashman blushing. Yeah. Did you ever think that could happen?
Turning beet red.
Larson, what are you doing?
Well, my wife has informed me that we have a date this weekend. So.
Oh, Larson.
But she also, sadly, she knows that my big plans are. Yeah. Westfield Comics is sending me my monthly box of comics.
You get a monthly box of comics?
Wow.
My monthly friend.
I had no idea. Did you know that?
I saw Larson's comic book and graphic novel collection the other day.
You go to Larson's house, and like then at some point the dirty secret will come out. He'll be like, do you want to see something? And he'll walk you. He walks you to a room. There's a whole room, and he opens the door to the room, stacked to the ceiling with like 100 boxes.
Not the entire room, one wall.
Dude, no. It's the entire room.
No, it's one wall.
So what? A wall. A wall floor to ceiling with comic book boxes.
I'm not saying it's great that I have a wall. I'm just saying it's only a wall.
You know, it's weird with you kind of, you know, loftier, proto-nerd types is that, you know, you can actually justify your sickness by saying it's a collection. That's a sickness.
I thought it doesn't have to be a sickness, does it? It could be.
I thought it was breathtaking.
Thank you, Dan.
It's no okay. I'm sorry. Are you going to be playing any chess or anything like that this week?
My brother, by the way, ranks nationally.
Uh-oh.
Hey, why don't we get
because
a little...
Because he's a math professor.
Okay, that's all right. I understand. I understand the...
He's the number nerd. I'm the word nerd.
Oh, okay. That's right. Mm-hmm. You're very good at it. Maybe we get a little in-house D&D thing going. Could we?
Uh-oh. What's D&D exactly?
Let's give you that. All right, Riley, what do you got going this weekend?
I'm
going
to read the Michael Jackson trial transcripts.
Are you really?
Why not?
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not the nerd anymore.
I picture Randy in the bathtub with a bubble bath with the candles lit and the
Michael Jackson trial. It's either that or Little Kim, who apparently testified yesterday at her trial. I think she's going down, though, unfortunately. Yeah she's gone. She's done.
I haven't been keeping up with it. I don't know. I'd like to, you know.
Long story short, Little Kim is accused of lying to a grand jury. Mm. I think she will be convicted of lying to a grand jury.
Ah.
Just my opinion, but I think she's going down.
What am I going to do? Why don't you ask yourself that, Mark Maron? Mark Maron, what are you going to do? I'm going to go see the new David Mamet play tomorrow night. Tonight I'm probably going to alone. And, you know, I have no problem doing anything alone because I know that, you know.
Pashman doesn't believe in alone.
I know. Oh, wait, I never said that.
That was so funny. Hey, did you just say really, Larkin?
No, I said clearly.
Oh, okay. All right. That's very nice. That's very nice. Obviously, you know, I talked to Larson like 4 or 5 times a day.
Yeah.
Eventually, last week he finally broke down after, like, you know, another, like, I called him on Sundays. Like, what'd you do? Well, nothing. I just, you know, kind of hung out. Did some reading by myself, and finally he called me back and goes,
no, that's not what happened. Oh. My wife got off the phone with you and said, and then when I was done with you, she said, oh, my God, he was watching The Firm on TV alone at 3 in the morning.
Sometimes you turn it on. So that prompted Larson to call me the next day. He goes, you know, you can, you know, if you want to hang out. You know, I don't know if this is, crossing a line, but, you know, you shouldn't be watching The Firm at 3 o'clock in the morning.
That Grisham channel is addictive.
Wow.
But, buddy, to see...
We've hung out before, though. We come into Brooklyn a few times.
Yeah,
I mean, other than just, like, you know, after work going out for lunch.
I feel like we hang out constantly. My wife calls you my husband. Why is she making me the girl?
I was just going to say, that's funny because my wife calls you my wife.
Oh. Wow.
Yassi.
This sounds like prison talk to me.
It's weirding me out a little bit.
I have this image of the two of you guys skipping through a field, holding a picnic basket.
What, full of bacon and egg sandwiches? And
how in the name of God do you extrapolate that from the relationship that you do see?
And he's got a backpack full of comics.
Let me read to you.
He's holding one up in front of his face and spinning around.
And I've got my guitar.
Yeah.
Wow, this is getting sad. How did this turn into this?
Getting sad.
All right, yeah, so that's it. I guess we got it all wrapped up.
Yeah.
So now you guys can get out of here.
All right. Let's not forget Brendan, by the way. I don't know what kind of weekend he's going to have since he's
in Memphis. Yeah, we're going to talk to him in a minute. I feel bad that he's not here, but we will call him in Memphis. And right now, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So I just bought a brand new, as you see it right here. Am I right? Can you see it, Pashman?
It's right there.
It isn't shiny and pretty. The brand new iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and see what it can do. Some woman wrote us an email and said, I just want that. Can you just give me that sound? You know, the sound of Brendan doing the intro? Because I think she said it was hysterical. I want to put it on my computer. Anyways, from the New York Times, U.S. and European allies agree on steps in Iran dispute. All right, U.S. and European allies agree on steps in Iran dispute. Translation. President realizes he can't simultaneously attack Iran and the AARP. Yes. From Fox News, lawmakers propose easing campaign finance rules. All right, lawmakers propose easing campaign finance rules. Fox proposes changes in henhouse access protocol. From the Associated Press, inmate says he was given laxative as prank. Inmate says he was given a laxative as prank. Come on. Translation. Jailers try early release program. Oh, my God. It's officially a morning zoo. Okay, we'll be back. What do you
I
got,
want a
Ryan?
Ringtone. I want that, the Brendan P.W. McDonald ringtone.
All right, we will. We'll get you that. I think we could do that. Someone in here knows how to make that Riley's ringtone, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. We'll get right on that.
All right, so when we come back, we are going to talk about, I believe, a little bit about Social Security leading up to our phone call with Brendan, who's in Memphis.
Yeah.
And later in the hour, we have Anne Lamott to talk about progressive Christianity. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your vlog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
This is Morning Sedition. We're talking about Social Security and Bush's two-day Screw the Future tour, or as I like to say it, the Screw the Future revival show promoting his proposal to gut Social Security. Now, we sent our associate producer, Brendan P.W. McDonald, on the road with the president. He filed his first report live on the show yesterday, and I got to tell you, it was more than a little disturbing, wasn't it, Mark?
It was.
But I think he's bounced back, and today the president will be holding one of his anti-Social Security rallies in Memphis, Tennessee, home to one of our newest affiliates, WWTQ 680 AM. And there's actually a protest going on nearby at the High Point Pinch parking lot at 111 Jackson, north of the Cannon Center. It's going on right now, and you can go to midsouthpeace.org for more info. Brendan has apparently, bounced back, as I said before, from yesterday's traumatic events, and he joins us live now from the Cook Convention Center in Memphis. Brendan, can you set the scene for us, buddy?
Yeah, Mark. Well, Bush has come to the right place if he wants to divide the country and cost untold numbers of Americans their lives.
So what are you talking about? I mean, what's wrong with Memphis?
No, there's nothing wrong with Memphis. I got nothing against Memphis.
Uh-huh.
We're one block away from Jefferson Davis Park.
Oh, my God. Naming your park after the guy who divided the country, cost American troops their lives, and wanted to keep black people in chains?
Yep.
No wonder Bush is going there.
Well, it's not just Bush. There's already hundreds of Republicans on the scene. Fortunately, though, I don't see anything that would make my nerves rattled.
Uh-huh.
It's just a group of people standing around.
Uh-huh.
Well, and there's a large group in front. They're coming forward. Looks like they're singers. I can kind of hear. Let me listen in. I think they're singing something.
Oh man, that can't be good.
Well, Mark, despite the ominous singing, I'm hopeful that we're not going to see a repeat of yesterday. There's just some people singing here. There are some old people, but there's no elaborate stage or platform or anything like yesterday. It's just kind of an extended orchestra pit, pit of some kind, I guess. And now they're just... Whoa!
What, Brendan, what the hell happened? That a gun?
Mark, I think they're shooting. They're shooting people. Republicans have lined them up along a pit. They're just shooting them one by one.
Oh, my God. You're freaking me out, man. Are you serious?
Hey,
what's going
on? I'm just talking to my friend here.
Hey, give me that
phone. No, I'm cool. I hate old people, man. You can shoot them all you want. I don't care. I'm cool.
Oh, okay. You hate old people? You think you hate old people?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you come shoot something.
No.
Oh, my God. Brendan. What are we going to do now? I hope we can get him back on the phone. That was Brendan P.W. McDonald down in Memphis. Man, it has not been a good couple of days for Brendan. I mean, yesterday with the fire and everything.
Let me tell you something. Yeah. If it's bad for Brendan, it's worse for the elderly.
Yeah, no kidding. It's awful. Just awful. You know, I mean, it's shameful just the degree that these Republicans will go to try to get this Social Security thing pulled off. I mean, you heard that ad that we got from those same people that did the Swift Vote for Truth ad?
Yes,
oh,
I did.
Oh, my God. Let's see. You know, this is shameful. Can we hear it, Chris?
The American Association of Retired Persons is opposing President Bush's plans for Social Security. Why would they do that? If you want to know the truth about old people, talk to the people who know them.
Old people are needy. I need a ride. I need a walker. I need something to eat. Could somebody please help me? I'm in the toilet. I can't get out. It's horrendous.
I had to spend 15 minutes helping my mother find her glasses because she forgot where she put them. Just forgot.
Dude, they crap in their pants.
Enough about World War II. I get it. You were there.
I'm sorry, but if you're going to dinner at 4 o'clock, you really don't need more money.
You liberated Auschwitz. You were there. I understand. Can we watch The Apprentice now?
And when they wear those diapers, they can pee right on themselves, too. Just pee.
Brian! My name is Brian! God!
I remember this one time, my uncle, he was on the floor. I thought he was having a heart attack or he was dead or something. Turns out he wasn't. Just on the floor.
Who the hell is Bobby? Nobody knows Bobby!
Dude, they crap their pants.
Old people. They oppose President Bush's plans for Social Security. Isn't it time they died already? Paid for by Swift Boat Veterans for whatever cause is being funded by the right-wing millionaires at the moment.
All right, 23 past the hour, 24 past the hour. I like when the clock changes. I don't have to say that. You know that? I mean, I could say 6 minutes before the hour. You know, I could say 6 minutes before the half hour. No, if it were 54 past the hour, this is ridiculous waste of air time. Hey, I'm going to be at Cops Comedy Club April 1st and 2nd. If you want information about that, go to morningsedition.com to the, what is it called, the tour date section. So, Riley, what are we going to talk about now, my friend?
We're going to talk about Social Security, which everyone in the Democratic Party is saying is their last stand. This is the one they say they can win.
Oh, this is the battle worth fighting?
Yeah.
This is the one where it's like, you know, pick your battles. This is the one we're picking?
Yeah, they couldn't win the bankruptcy. They couldn't win the class action. They probably won't end up winning the restricting victims' rights. So I guess we're going to have to be happy with fighting Social Security.
They should have fought all of them.
Yeah, I know. There are people that are now saying they will oppose the Social Security plan put forward by President Bush under any circumstances, and if they can get a few Republicans to go along with them, it could kill the bill. They may never even get it to the floor for a vote.
And there's definitely hope for that, Riley. There's a few Republicans that aren't on board. I know that.
Yeah, yeah. And he's trying to woo them. That's why Bush is on this, what did you call it? The tragical history?
No, that was you. That was I call it the Screw the Future Revival Show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why he's on the road. He's going to places. And by the way, you know, this is part and parcel of Bush trying to reinforce Republican Party discipline. What, behind all of his trips and all the great words he's saying supposedly about Social Security, whatever, he's also saying, particularly to Republicans, Republican elected officials in some of these places, look, you all want to oppose Social Security, you might just face a primary opponent.
Uh-huh.
He's saying, get on the ranch, stay on the ranch. He's playing the kind of hardball that Democrats, at least as far as bankruptcy and some of these other bills, have not yet been willing to play.
Well, I'll tell you something, man. If the Democrats keep hitting like Howard Dean's hitting in the sense that, you know, these Republicans are untrustable with people's money, they've obviously depleted some of the Social Security trust and, you know, reinvested that somewhere else to cover some tax cuts. Whatever the plan is that it's a bolster to Wall Street. It keeps Wall Street a major player in the economy, which is not necessarily the greatest thing in the world. And it also gambles away, or potentially gambles away, money that should be secured by the government. So, you know, I don't know if he can wield that sword, because people's constituents, regular people, average people, thinking people, people our age, Mark Riley, there's no way this thing smells good. This is a bad deal. And you can tell that because they keep trying to rewrite their pitch. And it's publicized. It's like we keep trying to figure out a way to sell this. Maybe it's unsellable because it's a bad product.
Don't call it privatization. Don't call it crisis. Call it personal accounts. Call it having to fix Social Security. There are all of these little tweaks that they're trying to do in terminology because people are not buying. Their elected representatives are not buying.
Call it casinoization. What do you want to do with that Social Security money? And it's
sorry.
You lose. Good luck with the food and everything. We got Anne Lamott coming up. We're going to talk about faith. We're going to talk about Christianity from the liberal progressive perspective, which is something, you know, that I need to do because I'm not a believer. And we have Rapture Watch, coincidentally.
Oh, yeah. When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Blog
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
The show is Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. We will talking. We'll be talking to the author Anne Lamott in just a moment. But right now, the entire Milfington family is taking family vacation. As some of you noticed, war correspondent Mort Milfington, Rapture Watch correspondent Milf Cardinal Milfington, and Morning Remembrance Grief correspondent Mort Mortensen. And by the way, thank you, Penelope in Wyoming, for the lovely embroidered handkerchiefs.
Was gorgeous, wasn't it?
Yes. She's like sent like three gift packs, but the handkerchiefs for Mort were over the top. So all the Mortensons and Milfingtons are enjoying their day off, so we've been revisiting their most respected reports. Our listeners have voted for their favorites on MorningSedition.com, and right now we present your favorite Rapture Watch with Milf Cardinal Milfington. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Milf Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Drain, Oregon. Your Grace.
Thank you, misguided Hebrew. Hear my voice, ye earth-loving God-deniers. Gather round, ye peace-loving sucklers at the teats of Gog. Heed my words, thou lickers of toads, ye conversers with goats, and that guy at the pet store who told you you could hypnotize a parrot by kissing its stomach. I want my lips back. For now, it's time to set your clocks to daylight. You better save yourself time, because the rapture is upon us. Last hebdomad, you might recall I told you about volcanoes and earthquakes disrupting voters, primarily in Democratic states. The week before that, I told you about demons in Sweden broadcasting their satanic poetry into outer space. And before that, I told you about a man who walked into a bar holding three ducks. He set them on the bar and ordered three drinks. Well, the long and short of that is two of the ducks were having Congress with the third duck, whose name, it turns out, was Puddles. You know, I got lots of letters from people saying they heard that same story, only with geese. Shows to go, yeah? But now something even more diabolical is happening. According to the Associated Press, some godless harlot in Hollywood is using eBay to sell a 10-year-old grilled cheese sandwich she claims bears the image of the Virgin Mary. Virgin Mary, my anointed axe! You better not take another bite out of that sandwich, dragon lady, unless you got a week's supply of Antichrist stamp patches. For it was prophesied in Revelation
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Quote, and it shall happen that the mother of Satan will appear on plain white bread and American cheese cooked with no oil or butter and be kept in a clear plastic box with cotton balls on some nutcase's nightstand. And then a lake will burn and streets will run with blood. You know, the usual stuff. End quote. Now, under the circumstances, I can understand how a person would assume that any face appearing in a lump of 10-year-old congealed milk fat and bleached flour would have to be the mother of God. After all, for years, I labored under the false impression that the second face on the back of my brother's head was the incarnation of Jesus, until a friend of mine informed me it was, in fact, Beetle Bailey. No wonder my prayers were always answered with, "Ah, sorry, it's KP again. May you burn in hell, Mort Walker, and High and Low sucks." So if you lunkheads want a piece of Mother Satan's cheese, you might want to hit eBay. But be forewarned, idolators, the reserve is a few $1,000, and you may have to wade through a few 100 Cain-enabled hairballs first. In the meantime, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep the light on for you in hell.
Wow. Yeah, hi. Yeah, you know, Mort?
Yeah.
Milf? Mort?
Your Grace.
I'm sorry, Your Grace. But Beetle Bailey, man, where'd you pull that out of?
Beetle Bailey is the incarnation of hell. The devil.
All right. Yeah, so what happens now? Where are you going now?
Well, I live alone. Why do you want to... You know, one thing, I've been following your career for years now,
yeah.
Mr. Maron.
Yes.
There's one thing I can say with all due consistency, and that is, best hairpiece in the business.
Whoa!
hammer.
Yeah, all right. Man.
There you go.
Wow.
We've heard your favorites from the Milfington family throughout the week. Next week, the whole Milfington gang will be back. But Lawton Smalls from Planet Bush is going to be on vacation. So starting later today, you can go to MorningSedition.com to cast your vote for your favorite Lawton Smalls report from Planet Bush. Then tune in next week to hear the winners. So our guest now, she just her new book is called Plan B, Further Thoughts on Faith. You can get that book at Air America Radio's website, AirAmericaRadio.com, in the books department. She's here in the studio with us in the what must now seem like some sort of boys club. Welcome to the show, Anne Lamott. Good
Thank
morning.
You.
Good morning.
We I guess you know, coming out of Rapture Watch, it's a nice way to segue into your experiences in, you know, you have found some faith in the last few years. How did that come about?
It was like 20 years. Well, it came about 20 years ago when I was still drinking and using, and I used to go over to this flea market where, because I like really greasy food when I'm hungover.
Sure.
And I could, I mean, who doesn't? But mm-hmm. And then I could hear this music, this gospel-y music that was also the civil rights songs that we used to sing. I could hear it wafting over to the flea market, and I was just at the end of my rope, and I just sort of wandered over there. It was a Presbyterian church. It was mostly black at the time, and I was raised to hate Presbyterians. I was
How's that? Told,
well, because my father was raised by Presbyterian missionaries in Tokyo,
uh-huh.
and so we were taught that Presbyterians were like God's frozen people, you know. And I spent my entire life trying not to become a Christian. I
mean,
very, very committed to that. I tried to be a Buddhist, but I tried to be in everything. And I went to this church and I sat down, and they just didn't hassle me to death. I'd be very hungover, and they would just let me sit there, and you know, and they wouldn't try to get me to sign up for Bible study or to try to figure stuff out, like who shot the Holy Ghost, and have interesting theological insights.
They accepted you.
They just welcomed me. It was like the big shalom. You know, they let me sit there, and the air felt nutritious, and it was a cruddy-looking church, and the linoleum was peeling. But I always left before the sermon because the Jesus part just made my you know, blood run backwards, maybe just tense as a rat. And then finally, I just sort of started to feel that, I don't even know how to say it. I just sort of gave up, and I said, okay, whatever.
You surrendered to Jesus.
I ran out of bullets.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Let me ask you a question, because I, you know, I spend a lot of time criticizing the Christian right.
Well, so do I.
And, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And, so you know, I'm not a believer myself. I am sober as well, but I am not a believer in anything specific.
Yeah.
But you have had, you know, you seem to focus on progressive Christian values as opposed to what the Christian right is. And you've had some experiences with Christian right people, the Christo-fascist zombie brigade of the neocon death cult, which is what I like to call them, at your readings. And what are those? How did those unfold?
Well, I think that it just makes right-wing Christians just crazy that I make a lot of fun of, first of all, my own faith, because I don't have a single interesting theological thought on anything. I just love Jesus. I didn't mean to, and I just do. And so mostly where I get attacked is on radio shows with call-in function, so that the Christian right will call and explain all the reasons I'm going to go straight to hell and rot for all eternity, which is very Christian.
But loving Jesus isn't enough.
My God, no, because you have to hate gays and you have to have.
And they say this to you?
Let me give you an example. I was in Washington, D.C. the other night, and a man who I could see was just tense as a rat came up to me during the signing, and he said, I just want to give you two pieces of scripture. And I immediately knew I was doomed, that I was a unit. And I wanted to beg him, please don't give me any scripture, because like a liberal would never do that. Like,
right.
And so the scripture had to do with Genesis and how God created man and woman, like the Harry Belafonte song, the male Piaba and the man Piaba. He said, I'm just trying to help you get in alignment with what is true. So, you know, a liberal Christian would never do that. And first I was just sort of patting him in my black belt codependent way of saying, thank you, can we move on? And I eventually, in a warm, sweet, tender sort of flight attendant Christian way, I just shoved him away. And then another woman came up to me, lovely woman, older than, you know, maybe in her 60s, and she said, I'm a Republican, I'm a right-wing Republican. I love your work, but it causes me, I feel grievous reading how you write, how you talk about us. And I said, I'm so sorry, but I feel grievous about how your people govern us.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think that you have are destroying the world and the environment, and that this is the most, the single most dangerous administration in our history. And she said, but it just makes me feel bad the way you write about it. I said, well, don't read it. You know, that's a no-brainer.
Now, you have come through, obviously, a progressive Christian experience with the church you mentioned, which is Presbyterian out in California.
Yeah.
The general perception among a lot of Americans is that progressive, quote, liberal churches are shrinking while evangelical, conservative Christian churches are growing. What's been your experience?
That, I don't believe that to be true. I honestly believe there are exactly the same number of Democrats who are believers as there are Republicans. It's just like with the Republicans, it's more of this sort of Tom DeLay, Hammer of God, you know, Christian version of Towering Lion of Judah. And with the liberal churches, I know I'm very involved with some gay and lesbian and transgender churches. Our church is extremely grounded in the civil rights movement. It's definitely the God of Martin Luther King. I mean, And my experience is that the Christian left and the progressive left and all the people that have made Jim Wallace's book, God's Politics, a huge runaway bestseller, are just doing the work. They're walking the walk. You know, they're taking care of, they're feeding people. They're feeding the poor. That, to me, is how you tell if someone is a Christian, is that they're taking care of the poor and they're trying to get everybody health insurance. What? I think it's a real no-brainer. Jesus said, try not to kill a bunch of people today. Take care of the poor. If you want to get to heaven, you need a letter of recommendation for the poor. Just write this down and tape it next to the phone. Keep it simple. So
let's talk more about that after the break, about, you know, what the difference is between, you know, liberal Christian and conservative Christian, and also some more of your stories, and talk a little bit about what the book, which is called Plan B, Further Thoughts on Faith, is about. We're with Anne Lamott. We'll be back in a second. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
I'm Reverend Al Sharpton, and I may not be part of his diocese, but I listen to MILF Cardinal Milfington's Rapture Watch on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. We're going to land this thing. We're talking to Anne Lamott here. Her book is Plan B, Further Thoughts on Faith. After years of being in the wilderness of drugs and alcohol and all that comes along with that, you tried a lot of things, you know, Buddha, this and that, and you landed on Jesus. But you say that's about all in terms of your Christianity is not hinged to a particular movement or hinged to a particular
ideology.
Ideology.
Yeah, yeah.
You just you're into the Jesus, and you believe in progressive Christianity. You believe in the actual acts that Jesus took. Jesus was a guy that hung out with the prostitutes, lepers. He wanted
prisoners.
To help the poor,
yeah,
prisoners.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are the elements of the Christianity that you find most valuable.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the Christian right, and in terms of your book, your whole book is not about bashing Bush or about criticizing the Christian right. What is it about?
It's about faith. It's about trying to sort of help people keep their hopes up, you know, in these incredibly dark and screwed up days. It's about it's about my family, it's about my kid and my dog who died that I'm still getting over, although it was like 3 years ago. And it's about it's just about like real life stuff, but with a spiritual perspective, so that I do believe that there's a goodness in the world.
How about some pointers? How about keeping my hopes up today? We do it here with comedy and just a manic pace.
Uh-huh.
You know, but you know, I understand faith and I understand belief and I understand why they're important. But what are some practical ideas for people in terms of keeping their hopes up? Because we get letters all the time like, thank God you guys are out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Air America was the only station I could listen to after the election for about a month. Mm-hmm. It's really true. I had no stomach for analysis of the election, but I could put this show on and I could breathe again. I'd be driving along and, I mean, praying about Air America, going, this is my main prayer. It's going, either going, help me, help me, help me, or going, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I keep it, like, really simple.
That's
if I go
really
outside,
simple.
Yeah, if I go outside, I have a third prayer, which is I go, wow. But I do keep it simple. I do believe in the God of Dr. Martin Luther King, and I do believe that if you are alone with your own mind that's sort of orbiting around yourself, you're with your ego and just your gravest mental illness, whereas if you do what Jesus said, which is to take care of the poor, like we're in an emergency ward here these days, I think, and some of us are doing better than others. And what I understand Jesus said was to go take care of the other people who aren't doing so well, to bring them the orange juice and the graham crackers, you know, and to you take the action and then the insight follows.
We were talking about that earlier. About being kind and about reaching out to people who are in need is completely rewarding to those who do it.
Yeah, that's very true. But, you know, you bring up the issue of helping the poor.
Yeah.
And there are going to be evangelicals who say, well, that's what we do. We reach out, we help the poor, even though in some instances, not in all, but in some instances they're doing so with, you know, faith-based initiative money from the Bush administration.
Right.
In your view, does that make any difference?
Well, yeah, it does, because I think that what they're who they're taking care of are the deserving poor. That what Bush, in his infinite grasp of nuance and theology, thinks of as the deserving poor, and then also in order to get the care, the food, the clothes, the showers, the whatever, you have to take the Bible study.
It's conditional.
It's conditional.
Right.
If you do this and you come to believe that God also hates gay people like we do, you can tell you've created God in your own image when he or she hates all the exact same people you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so to get help from the faith-based initiatives, you have to do the Bible study. I know a lot of these gay and lesbian churches in San Francisco, and they are doing to me what is the single most profound thing I've ever heard, which is they're offering showers every day to the poor and the homeless, and they're showering people and they're washing their own clothes and they're giving them back to them so that they can leave clean. And I'm not going to make a case for baptism. I'm just going to make a case for the fact that I'm not sure that the right wing is offering poor people, really dirty people, showers.
No, they will offer to hose them down, though.
They will hose them down, but to get hosed down, you have to take the Bible study.
Or you have to be in prison.
Yeah. To me, that's profound. I mean, I don't actually like my own teenager to be in my shower, let alone people I don't know who are maybe having tiny, you know, anger management issues. So, anyway.
Let me ask you that question, but before we run out of time, what was the moment of darkness you had with the president in terms of your thinking about him?
I would not say there was one moment. I would say that in 2002 and 2003, I can just tell you, I had to go up to the altar at the end of the church service, where you go up if you're extremely demented or all sampaku. And I would have to say, I am more mentally ill because of this administration than I'm able to tolerate.
Sure.
I feel that I could have a nervous breakdown. And the people wouldn't know because I would just whisper to the pastor, and she'd said what Jesus would say, which was like, it's okay, honey. You know, you're in. You're covered. You're going to get a nice seat in heaven in the room with the chocolate and the cocktail prawns.
Ooh.
And then
I had no idea that
Yeah. No, I'm very clear on the seating arrangement situation. I'm afraid I'm going to be in the same room with Bush because that's like what heaven will be like.
All right. We're going to run out of time here. Anne Lamott.
No.
Yes, the book is Plan B.
I'm
further
not
thoughts on faith. You don't have to.
I'm staying. I live here now.
You can hang out. We're gonna do one more bit. You're gonna be in Greenwich, Connecticut tonight. Reading where?
I don't know.
Okay, so somewhere in a bookstore in Greenwich, Connecticut. The book again, Plan B. Further thoughts on faith, available at AirAmericaRadio.com. If you want it, go get it. And that's the sound of the fax machine. It's our liberal agenda from the Streisand compound, giving us our daily rundown of all the important liberal causes. Here you go. Write these down. One, observe Poison Prevention Awareness Month by urging people not to swallow this administration's lies. Two, try to blame your latest emotional meltdown on global warming. Three, stand outside Bush's Social Security roadshow with a sign that says, we could solve our energy problems just by tapping Bush's snake oil. Four, ride around on public transportation ostentatiously reading Noam Chomsky or Howard Zinn and muttering loudly, so right. So very right. Five, today's phrase, just drop into conversation. If 50 Cent opens one of George Bush's privatized Social Security accounts, by the time he retires, he'll be 35 Cent. Wake up, sheeple. Bush is the real gangster. What do we got on Monday, Riley?
Oh, we got a bunch of stuff going on. And Lamont, thank you very much for
being
here.
Thank you,
Lamont. We really appreciate it. Now, we should let people know, because Mark won't say this. Mark is going to be on the Randy Rose Show with guest host Louis Black Tuesday.
All right.
Yeah. Right. Now, on Monday, we're going to be talking with our good friend Sam Rosenfeld from the American Prospect Magazine. We're talking about Bush's budget and the focus thereof.
Well, have a good weekend, Mark Riley.
Have a good weekend, man. Enjoy yourself. Kalo, enjoy yourself as well. We'll see you Monday here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.